From the KTOO newsroom, I'm Pablo Arauz-Pena with a local and statewide news update. Five Tlingit sacred items could be returned to Central Council Tlingit and Haida Indian Tribes of Alaska. A notice published in the Federal Register on Monday stated the items were, quote, acquired by William P. Palmer III and given to the University of Maine in 1982. The items now reside in the university's museum. They include a shaman's pipe and mask and other items found near gravesites or associated with death ceremonies. Under federal law, such cultural or sacred objects belong to indigenous descendants and can be removed from museums for repatriation. Central Council members visited the museum in Maine in 2018 to make the determination. One of the items that could be headed back to Alaska is a Tlingit Raven grave totem, which records indicate once hung in the Elks Lodge in Juneau. The transfer of the objects to Central Council will take place after August 5th if no other descendants make a claim. And at least three people were injured, one seriously, when fireworks accidentally detonated in a crowd during Sitka's Independence Day celebration. The incident occurred shortly before midnight on July 3rd during the finale of the half-hour show. Sitka Fire Chief Dave Miller was standing by with a fire engine and ambulance about 150 feet away from the fireworks area on the old boat ramp near the UAS Sitka building. A crowd of onlookers was gathered about 100 yards down the beach in a grassy area by the Mount Edgecombe ball field. Over the course of the finale, medics were first summoned by a 911 call to attend a man who had suffered an eye injury by the ball field. Next, they were flagged over to the beach.
Right there in the grass, right there, there were two people down and appeared to have been struck by the fireworks in some way.
The two victims were the adult sisters Karen and Michelle Materena, according to a social media fundraising campaign circulating in Sitka. Miller says both were transported by the ambulance to the Mount Edgecombe Medical Center. Karen was subsequently medevaced to Seattle for additional treatment. Miller doesn't know how many others were in the area at the time. The fireworks were so bright, it was hard to tell exactly what happened.
It looks like something maybe tipped over or fell over or got knocked over, and some of the fireworks appeared to have taken off in different directions rather than up.
KCAW News spoke with a pyrotechnician who confirms that there was a malfunction during the finale, which, for reasons unknown, launched more quickly than planned, causing some of the fireworks to prematurely detonate while still loaded in the tubes. The subsequent explosion may have forced other unfired tubes off aim. The late night fireworks on July 3rd are a long tradition in Sitka, sponsored for about the last 20 years by Petromarine. This year, the Hames Corporation took on the job for the first time. However, the location of the show, setup, and crew have been consistent for many years. As of Monday afternoon, a GoFundMe campaign for Karen and Michelle's recovery expenses had raised over $5,000. You can find a link on the KCAW website at kcaaw.org. Last month, the Providence Transitional Care Center in Anchorage became an epicenter of the coronavirus pandemic in Alaska. For weeks, employees inside the center fought to contain the quick-moving disease as one infection turned into dozens more. Alaska Public Media's Tegan Hanlon recently spoke with two of these employees about what it was like to work in the middle of the state's largest coronavirus outbreak.
Hashi Price starts her workday in the parking lot. She sits in her car and puts on her face mask and a face shield and a hair cover.
And then I go in and get tested. You know, make sure I don't have any of the symptoms or fever. Then I put on my gown and everything and get ready for work.
Price is a certified nursing assistant at the Providence Transitional Care Center and a mom of three. She came back to work for maternity leave in March, and she remembers following the news around that time about the coronavirus tearing through long-term care facilities in Washington State, settings so similar to her own workplace here.
I was scared watching it and how fast it was spreading. It scared me.
Price has worked at the Transitional Center for about a decade, serving patients who live on the East Anchorage campus for weeks as they recover from surgery or injury or serious illness. She says new protocols went into place early at the center to try to keep the virus out. They told visitors they had to stay on the other side of a window if they wanted to see patients. Masks became mandatory for all employees. And for a while, that seemed to work.
I feel like we did a really good job because we kept it out of our facility, even though it was all over until the end of May.
That's when the coronavirus got inside. Connie Mast is the center's director of nursing. Her phone rang at 4:45 a.m.
They said that we have a positive patient, first positive patient. I kind of get up on my bed, sit on the side of my bed for a while and thinking about it, what we did wrong, you know, what we did wrong, because it seems like we did everything we can.
Mast knew it would only get worse.
I always hear this, that there should never be one. There should never be one. It's impossible that it's only one. So it's like, I was worried, oh my God, so I know we have one and there will be more.
She went to work right away. Suddenly she, Price, and their colleagues found themselves on the front lines of fighting the coronavirus, like so many other healthcare workers across the globe. The transitional center locked down even more. Patients had to stay in their rooms. Staff started wearing face shields. Everyone got tested. And then they got tested again and again and again. Mast prayed before each nasal swab that her result would come back negative.
I can't afford to be sick because I know that I will be needing, my staff needs me and the patient needs me as well.
Mast and Price never did test positive, but tests over several weeks revealed 47 coronavirus cases among the center's patients and caregivers, about one in four. Two patients died. Mast says it's emotional to talk about. Price says she tried to stay focused and do her job and do it well. She says some of those infected showed no symptoms.
And then we've had the ones that get really sick, you know, and it's hard to see, you know, that they can't get comfortable and their body hurts all the time.
Outside of work, Mass and Price's lives changed too. Mass started staying in a separate room at her house and stopped hugging and kissing her two kids. Price says she immediately takes a shower when she gets home.
My kids already know, and my husband already knows, that they can't touch me or anything until I've already showered and, you know, put on a fresh, clean clothes.
After weeks of a rising case count at the center, Providence staff recently said they're hopeful the virus may be contained, or at least close to it. A fifth round of testing at the end of June identified no new cases at the center. Price says after working and living through the outbreak, the piece of advice she'd like to share with Alaskans is please wear a mask and wash your hands to help protect the community, including some of the city's most vulnerable, like her patients. In Anchorage, I'm Tegan Hanlon.
The emergence of the COVID-19 pandemic meant big changes to Kotzebue's annual celebration of the 4th of July. While most events were canceled, the city still put on a parade that drew hundreds to the city's streets. KOTZ's Wesley Early has more.
Kicking off with a group of Kotzebue veterans waving the Alaskan American flags, fire trucks, police cruisers, city vehicles, and more paraded down Kotzebue's front street, with locals lined along the road overlooking the Kotzebue Sound. Those who were working on floats were instructed to wear gloves and a mask as they threw candy out to children. While most of the floats were emblazoned with traditional red, white, and blue, Sikorik Martha Whiting used the opportunity to highlight the Inupiaq traditions of the Sisalik Fish Camp. Her truck was adorned with fish, large animal hides, and children were in the back, dressed in traditional regalia.
There's big, giant she-fish. We go she-fishing at the top, right? You got that she-fish. Then you got the Ugochak, which we're going to use to make hard bottoms for mukluks.
For Sikorik, the parade gives many locals a chance to express pride in the two worlds that they occupy.
We celebrate our Inupiaq way of life. And then we also celebrate being American.
The event drew hundreds of onlookers, with many of them practicing social distancing and wearing masks. The parade looped down Front Street, turning to pass the Northwest Arctic Borough Office, and continued to loop in front of the Manelik Health Center. Towards the end of the parade loop, a group of protesters had gathered with signs emblazoned with messages against police brutality and other social injustices. Sikorik raised her fist in solidarity with them as her float passed by. She later said that part of being an American is using their freedom of speech to speak out.
If people have something to say, let them say it. You know, let them speak their truth. And if it happens to be on Independence Day, more power to them. You know, as long as people are have that opportunity to say what they feel, you know, more power to them. We can't, like, suppress people and say, don't say that.
Overall, the parade wrapped up in about an hour. It was one of few city-sponsored Independence Day celebrations statewide, as most official gatherings had been canceled due to the pandemic. Reporting in Kotzebue, I'm Wesley Early.